From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of October 2010, USDA Report Day again. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk with Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. USDA's Joe Persaki will join us, too. We'll discuss those numbers from the report with him. He can take up the crop production report numbers. Remember, that's the 155.8, but not the USDA's drop in the stocks number or the consequent usage number changes. Those come from WASDE. Still, we'll talk with Joe this afternoon. And then we'll hear from Bruce Bostert. He's at the Grain Elevator in Ludlow, Illinois. And in the second half hour of the program, we're bringing that back on our home radio station. And you can hear this on willag.org this afternoon or this evening over the weekend. We'll talk with Scott Irwin for a time period about the USDA report. Scott's got some really interesting thoughts about who might get rationed out of the marketplace. Scott Irwin is an ag economist from the U of I, and we'll do it all today during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished like this. December wheat, 60 higher at 719 and a quarter. March at 753 and three quarters, up 60. July at 765, 56 and a quarter higher. December corn futures, 528 and a quarter, up the limit, 30 higher. The March at 537 and a half. The May at 542 and a half. July at 545 and a quarter. And December at 5.11 and a quarter, all locked the limit higher today, up 30 cents. November bean futures up 70 cents at 11.35, that's the limit higher. January at 11.45, March at 11.53 and a quarter, May at 11.57 and a quarter, July at 11.63 and three quarters, and the beans in November's, those were all up 70, but the November's gained 57 cents at $11.19 and a quarter in Chicago for next year's soybeans. Bean meal up 25 bucks at 3.17, bean oil at 46.22, up 2.43 on the afternoon. Mercantile Exchange, October feeder cattle, 42 and a half higher at 95.55. The November feeders at 107.65, down $1.32.5, and lean hogs at 73.85, and the D's at 255 higher. That October contract at 95.55 were the feeders. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures, $82.61 a barrel, up 94 cents. Ethanol at 218 and 4 tenths, that's 19 and 6 tenths higher. Natural gas at 365 and 2 tenths, 3.5 cents higher. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.28 and 2 tenths of a cent, 3 cents higher for the day. October gold futures at $1,344.20, a settlement price up $10.30. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average just above 11,000. That's right, above 11,000, 11,005, up 56 points. The U.S. dollar at 77.32 is down 0.05 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. So it comes from the National Weather Service. They say sunny skies today, a high of 81 degrees, southwest winds at around 9 miles an hour. Tonight, clear, a low of 48, west-southwest winds at 6 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny, a high near 86, west-southwest winds between 5 and 7. Saturday night, clear, a low of 53, light southwest winds, and then Sunday it'll be sunny, the high of 86 degrees, southwest winds between 5 and 8. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 56. On Columbus Day, mostly sunny, the high near 82. Monday night, partly cloudy, the low of 53 degrees, and Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high near 79. Tuesday night, we get out far enough, it'll get to 51 degrees, partly cloudy. Wednesday, a chance of showers, partly sunny, a high near 69 degrees. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 46. And on Thursday next week, sunny skies at the moment at least, and a high near 66 degrees. More on the agricultural weather when we talk to Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. That comes up at the bottom of this half hour here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at what happened in Chicago, and mostly that was impacted by what happened in Washington at USDA. After the release of the latest crop production and WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, Mike Zuzulo is on the phone line with us. Mike, I did not see the open this morning, but I suspect it opened and just stayed higher all day, didn't it?
That's exactly right. Not only did the report not feed the bear, Todd, it started to death. At least here in the short term, we had both decreasing supplies and increasing demand by USDA. And what surprised me so much was, with harvest half over and the bin door shutting, you know, how we could get such a big drop in the supply side in 1 month. I don't think it's a big surprise to producers. I think they've been waiting on this. But I think from a statistical and USDA standpoint, to have this big of a jump one way or the other at this late stage is something that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to talk about and maybe the USDA can get into in their data users meeting at the end of October, which I'm going to go up to and listen intently to.
That should be a good meeting at the end of October.
I think I'm going to tape that one, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't had that one on my schedule, but I might go up to that one this year, too. I bet Dickie's ready to go as well. So anyway, you know what? Let's start out with something that I don't have access to or haven't seen yet, and I don't know whether you've looked up the synthetics.
Yeah, I sure have.
So let's go through those, because we locked the corn futures, locked bean futures up. Novembers and Decembers, and the synthetics show what the price should be if they were still trading. What is it?
These options were saying that we were probably trading another whole lock limit up day when we come back Sunday night, if the close today was anything to say about it, at 565 to 566 in December corn.
And in the beans?
No beans, 1144 to 1146. Not nearly as deep in terms of the pool today. In fact, at one point, Todd, the pool got down to about 7,500 contracts. Looked like the beans right around mid-session might have come off of the limit, moved like the wheat did, but then we started to build the pool again. But only about, you know, anywhere from 7 to 10 cents from where the limit move was. So I would suspect Sunday night the corn has the best chance to open up limit again.
Okay, so let's go back through the numbers as they came through USDA. Pull out your supply-demand sheet, because here we go. Let's see, USDA now says that we have, just a few more acres, right, at 88.2 planted, 81.3 harvested. That's up 0.3%. Yield down, though, 4.1% from last month. Remember, we were at 162.5. For corn, now nationwide at 155.8, and they moved the average cash price, which at $4.40 when it came out in September was the highest cash price ever. They moved that up 60 cents.
I'm wondering if that 60-cent move in the corn is not a record for this time of year, and I'm wondering whether and I haven't gone back and looked yet, but I'm wondering whether the yield for an October report with that big of a percentage decline is not also a record for that time of year. Maybe Mr. Persaki will be able to help us. But that was the big deal, was that the corn yield dropped much more than the trade was expecting. I mean, I think all of us eventually, I was thinking about it this morning, if I would have put out a 155 yield to the news wires, they probably would not have counted that, because they would have said, you're outside the range of estimates and we really want to keep everybody pretty tight this late in the year. So I think that was the real shocker, was the USDA came in and brought it down so much in 1 month. And I went back and looked on Monday's harvest progress. Nebraska was 18% harvested. Iowa was 19% harvested. Yet we saw declines of 10 bushels in Iowa on today's report. We saw a decline of 9 bushels in Nebraska. I think that's what the trade was really keying off of, along with the residual of that grain stocks number, and the trade coming back and saying, well, maybe that 300 million bushels really isn't there. Maybe that is partly 2010 crop, because the way some of the text was written on the WASDE text on the first two pages.
Yeah, you'll hear me talk a bit later in the second half hour of the program on our home radio station and online at willag.org. I have a conversation with Scott Irwin, who's an ag economist here on campus. And we take that up in great detail, and we talk about RINs and who might get rationed out of this marketplace if that happens. As it happens right now, and I know he's been listening to part of this conversation, I'll bet he has some answers for us, because this time around he can't blame it on WASD. Joe Persaki is with us from his home there in the Washington, D.C. area. Joe, thanks for being with us, sir.
Good morning, Todd. Yeah. Or actually, good afternoon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was overnight. Okay, so let's start with the 155.8. How'd you come up with a number?
Well, we went out, you know, as we go out, we do our surveys. And this time we had 91% of our objective yield samples, we had lab data. I mean, real, genuine lab data, not, you know, preliminary. We had, these samples were mature. Basically, we were taking the samples from the whole field, you know, whole, the whole unit sent to the lab, and it's all about grain weight. And the grain weight just plummeted on these samples. That's what it's all about.
All about the grain weight, and so it plummeted, and you dropped it nearly 7 bushels. Mike asked earlier whether that was a record for a change from month to month, September to October, or any month. Do you know?
Well, we had, if you go back to 2004, we had an increase of 9 bushels on the upside back in 2004 from September to October. Now, on the downside, I think that could be, I'm looking at, you know, back in, you know, in history here, and I can't tell you, I don't see one this big.
I couldn't either.
Yeah, I mean, but on the upside, we've had them on the upside before, but never on the downside.
Mike, your mic is open, by the way, so if you have a question, just jump in. But I, take up Mike's, and I know, I'm certain you heard this, Mike was concerned, as the trade is, that there wasn't enough information at 19% complete in harvest out of the Western Corn Belt to drop an Iowa harvest by 10 bushel to the acre.
Well, that's, well, when you see that 19% on the crop progress, that's what actual farmers, you know, actually were in the, you know, got through the field. Now, this is the same, similar to the question that, you know, your counterpart there with WIL, you know, Dave Dickey and I last year talked about. Our numerators are actually, you know, they're in the field. You know, the crop is mature. They look at the ears. It has a black layer. It's got the line. They take the samples because they know that the farmers are going to be coming through here pretty soon. So they did the harvesting of the ears and sent it to the lab. Whereas, you know, the farmer's not quite there yet with the machinery, with the combines and stuff, but our numerators, they're pulling the samples and sending them into our lab.
How did the objective and then the farmer survey results, who thought it was the worst?
I'm sorry, repeat the question, I'm sorry.
So this survey is made up of both an objective and a farmer survey,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So were the farmers as low as your objective survey? I'm asking what the difference between the two.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying is, like, what did we see, you know, what was the change from month to month, I guess is what you're saying, right?
Yeah,
we saw more of a change on our objective yield than on the farmer side.
That was the question.
Right. I mean, that's what we saw. I mean, and I think this ties into, and I, you know, when I read and I listen, you know, to the stuff out on, you know, that comes across the wires and such, and, you know, and it's, I think this is what people are actually seeing once they get in the field, that the yields are not actually turning out to be what they thought.
Switch your gears to the beans. How'd you come up with a lower number?
Again, it's had a smidge lighter on the bean side, on the weight side, is what we saw on that, just a smidge. And that basically drives it. You know, when you drop down the weights on it, let me check. I'm verifying as I flip through the...
That's fine. And while you're doing that, what was the most memorable comment you got for the day from anybody as they saw these numbers?
Oh, it was yours.
Oh, I'm
this morning, like whatever it was, at 8, I can't remember, 8:40 or 8:50. It just says something about holy moly, Joe.
Yes, holy smokers, Joe.
Another
one. Well, USDA has done it again. There you go.
On the beans, right. We found, you know, when we were out there, we found more pods on the beans, but the weight per, you know, grams per pod, what we're getting to the lab. And again, it's very high because the bean crops fairly along too was lower than it was in that we saw in September.
And how many of the FSA numbers? This includes FSA numbers, so these are pretty good acreage numbers now because
switched. Now
those
we had, you're exactly right, because we had on the corn side we went up 350,000 acres on the planted, and then that translated just a little over 250,000 acres on the corn side, on the harvest side. And then on beans, we went down just a little over 1.1 million acres. And then on the harvest side, it's 1.16 million acres on the downside, coming in with the FSA data. Okay. So, yeah, we're lower, quite a bit lower on the acres on beans. And that's the other thing that's driving it, because the crop then disappears. And when our friends at the World Board, do they do their balance sheet work? I mean, there's quite a bit less beans then.
Okay. Joe, thanks so much, and get a good nap this afternoon and have a nice evening there in Washington.
Thanks, Todd.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That is Joe Persaki. He's with the United States Department of Agriculture. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Mike Zuzulo is still with us this afternoon. He's with Global Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. Mike, we didn't really take up the beans as we got started. What you see in those numbers, and how's this all play out? Because now I've got a bean number that's slightly smaller than we had before, and that put a little bullish tent, friendly tent, I suppose, at least at a minimum into the bean market.
I think it's all a weather market now, Todd. I think probably from an analytical standpoint, the most disturbing thing, and obviously I've been pressing bean sales harder than corn sales, so this is a little bit self-serving in saying this, but from an analytical standpoint, this is going to make beans almost a complete weather market. You're going to see, I think, the Mato Grosso Brazil area and La Nina put under a microscope at this point, and you're going to see volatility shoot to extremes at this point, because I don't think the trade was nearly prepared for a 265 carryover. I think going into the report, we were trading more like a 300 billion carryover in terms of psychology, and therefore anything that happens bullish in terms of weather is going to, I think, be magnified in the price. Last week, when I was going through the price model, at 1140 November beans, I would have said we were trading probably closer to a 200 million bushel carryover, and I still feel that way if it was just talking about U.S. supply and demand. But when you add weather, when you add funds, when you add new record highs in gold, and you add $10, almost $10 a barrel to the crude oil price in the last 2 weeks, this is going to be an extremely, extremely volatile market in the beans. Synthetically, it says the beans, pretty much factored in today's report in one day, but that does not mean the corn and the beans can't feed off of one another for another week to 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah. So do the beans slide higher, just pulled up by corn? Or?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I think weather and corn will be give the beans the ability to move higher. I think weather and a dollar bottom being put in place, or a Japanese yen high or a gold high, something that would push speculators to flip the switch and liquidate again, those would be the leading candidates for the downside push.
Now, we didn't take up the usage numbers with Joe because those come from the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, or the World Agricultural Outlook Board, different place than NAS. Joe's with NAS. What you see in those numbers that piqued your interest, either corn or beans or both?
Let's go with beans while we're on it. The bean numbers continue to go up in terms of exports. We gained another, I think, 35 million on exports, and we heard this morning that China was in for anywhere from 20 to 22 cargoes of beans. Essentially, we're not rationing enough right now, and I think that's where this 85 million bushel decrease in ending stocks from September to today is going to magnify in the trade, I suspect. And we also came back with higher crush numbers, another 15 million bushels. So domestically in beans, we're not rationing at these price levels. And globally for wheat and coarse grains, the USDA took global consumption up on both. So we're not rationing there either. And I think that's where if you look at the way the market is set up technically and fundamentally now, especially with harvest almost over and the funds having cleaned up and had that third quarter break like we were thinking they could, you really don't have a lot of negativity in this market for the next 2 to 3 weeks. Makes me feel a lot like 1980 all over again, where we rally, close to expiration like we did in 1980s corn.
Does this mean that you want farmers to stand aside and wait it out with the crop that they haven't priced on both corn and beans?
Yeah, for right now, exactly. And I'd be real careful about re-owning right now anything. If you were over 50% sold in cash, then I'd be looking at getting some re-ownership on once we did get a good strong pullback. But if you were only 40, 50% sold in 10 crop, I'd be looking for the next 3 weeks for another place to sell additional 10 bushels and probably start on 11. I don't want to drag and bring be the party pooper and take the punch bowl away early, but in 1980, we peaked in December at about $3.96, and by September of 82, we were back down to $2. So percentage terms, and given the likelihood of stagflation in the macroeconomics, we have to keep that in the forefront of our minds.
Oh, Mike, on that happy note, I got to let you go.
I knew you'd like that.
You held off. You held out on me till the end.
I tried, Don. I couldn't get that last minute. I had to go give up, though.
Okay.
Take it easy, buddy.
Hey, you too.
All
Mike
right.
Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Now remember, if you'd like to hear what Mike had to say again, you can do that in a couple of ways. It will be on our website at willag.org, Mike and Joe, that is, and Scott Irwin, who will come up in the second half of our program by about 3:15 this afternoon, or you can dial in for just Mike at 217-333-3434. We update our mobile analyst portal or voicemail at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. That number again is 217-333-3434.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Time on this Friday afternoon to check in on the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is with us. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, the farmers in your area have been griping at me for a long time to say, hey, this crop is not nearly as good as what you're talking about on the air. And apparently they were right. I bet they're happier today than they were yesterday.
Yes, a lot of more on the I told you so factor here.
Well, hey, I got a question for you up front. Do you have bids that they're able to use at this point? Can they sell cash grain to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot easier on limit up than limit down to put a bid out there. 5:10 on nearby corn and 11:03 on beans.
And how do you see things unfolding in the next, week? Let's go short term, and if you want to try long term, you can give it a shot.
A pool can always disappear over the weekend, but with the way the synthetics were and the size of purchase pools out here, you would have to look at right now, assuming there's going to be substantial follow through Sunday night.
Another question. In your area, how much of the crop do you think for corn that you have purchased at this point?
Oh, boy. We're 95%+ done, maybe more than that on corn. A huge percentage was priced out across the scale. Very, very little was stored this year.
Right.
So a bunch has already been moved.
And on the beans?
Beans, we're probably closing in on 90% done. The same way, a lot of beans were moved. Now, a lot of those, there was enough carry to still take a few cents out of it and pay storage to January. So a lot of those were January contracts, but still, there has been a lot of cash move.
And your bids for the beans for the day?
We are at 11:03.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Back in a couple minutes with Steve Hilberg, and then in the second half hour on our home station online at willag.org, we'll talk with Scott Irwin. He's an ag economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
It's National Noodle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, Jacob Schwepp demonstrated his process for making artificial mineral water. a German silversmith, he promoted Joseph Black's process of creating carbonic acid gas by combining chalk with sulfuric acid and then adding the gas to water under pressure. Artificial mineral waters were thought to have medicinal properties. It was not until the 1800s that CO2 was used for soft drinks like ginger ale and Coca-Cola. In 1893, cream of wheat was developed by Nabisco Foods. Millers in North Dakota, battling an economic depression, were looking to revive their business. The head miller, Thomas Admaden, convinced his partners to make a porridge out of farina, and cream of wheat was born. In 1851, Will Keith Kellogg died. He founded the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company to manufacture cereals developed by his brother, John Harvey Kellogg. And in 1997, prions were discovered. They were called an entirely new gene of disease-causing agents. Prions have been identified as a cause of mad cow disease. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we are wrapping up a harvest here in our part of the world fairly quickly. Can you talk just a bit about what we can expect for the weekend and next week and maybe look out to the west in the Midwest and maybe talk about Minnesota, Nebraska, and Iowa? Parts of Missouri.
Well, more of the same in a nutshell as far as what we're expecting the next few days to a week. Really not much of a change in the overall pattern. Rainfall is going to be hard to find here in the next week or so. It's going to be warmer than normal, it is today, and it will continue that way for the next couple of days. October so far has been pretty much below normal across all of the Midwest, including Illinois, about 2 to 5 degrees below normal. That'll be sort of averaging out here over the next couple of days as we get some above normal weather. But not much different out in the high plains and the western parts of the region. It's been warmer there. In fact, temperatures in Minnesota actually have been near to above normal for much of this month so far, anywhere from 1 to 4 degrees and back westward. So sort of a big difference there, but we've been on the cool side of that. There is going to be a cold front probably moving through here on Tuesday, early Wednesday. That will knock the temperature back a bit, but probably still be a little bit above normal. And as far as rainfall, there isn't going to be much for this front to work on. There may be a few scattered showers or sprinkles as this front moves through late Tuesday into Wednesday, but I wouldn't expect much more than that. And then the rest of next week looks dry with, again, a little bit of a warm-up toward the end of the week ahead of the next frontal system.
Yeah, a couple of climatic things to take a look at. Maybe tell us a bit about the month of September as it wrapped up, what it looked like. And then did we have a killing freeze frost in parts of Illinois and the upper Midwest this week, and now are we in the midst of an Indian summer?
Well, we did over the upper Midwest. There was temperatures reached 28, actually into southern Wisconsin at a few locations. But in terms of a widespread killing freeze, that was pretty much limited to the Arrowhead of Minnesota, the northern half of Wisconsin, and the northern half of lower Michigan. But a few other little low spots around the Midwest that got down to 28 or less. But in general, most of Illinois has not even seen 32 degrees yet, about the northwestern or northeastern half A few locations got down to 32. Here officially in Champaign-Urbana, we didn't really come close, but out in the rural areas, for example, at my house, I was down to 33 both Monday and Tuesday, and there was a lot of frost. So technically, we're not in the Indian summer yet for most locations because we haven't hit that freeze. September as a whole was pretty much near normal across the Midwest. People find it hard to believe because of the very warm period we had, but that offset a very cool period at the beginning of the month.
Thanks so much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Stay with us if you can. We'll talk with Scott Irwin, ag economist from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to a special extended edition of the Closing Market Report. Our thanks to the management here at WILL Radio, Illinois Public Media, for making the time available for me to talk with Scott Irwin today. I had a conversation actually earlier this morning, not long after the USDA released the crop production and WASDE figures. We started out by asking him to explore those numbers, and then it quickly turned into a really good conversation about the ethanol industry and RINs. And $6 corn. Here's Scott and his initial review of what happened in the marketplace.
Well, what's interesting about it, when you dig into that number, first off, it does seem to be, to me, consistent with a lot of the anecdotal yield reports that were flowing out throughout the Midwest. From that perspective, it's not a huge surprise. What I found interesting in the information that the USDA provides, on their objective yield indicator, the average ear weights didn't decline very much. What you saw was, in fact, a drop in population estimate. So I take from that that a large part of the reason that this yield number dropped so much was on the farm operator side of the USDA's yield estimates. Most people forget that all of these USDA yield forecasts, Todd, are based on two yield indicators. There's the objective yield indicator that seems to get most of the coverage and what I was just discussing. But they have a second one, which is simply a survey of farmers. They just call phone or through email, ask them what your expected whole farm average. And that's the second yield indicator. And so I'm guessing from everything I've heard that there's been a sharp drop in farmers' expectations about yields as they've gone through harvest. And that's a big part of the drop in the number we see here.
You can see those numbers in Illinois. They dropped the corn yield by 14 bushel to the acre. That was an enormous drop. But we know, for instance, that north of Champaign, and once you get into the Dwight area, that things were very dry and they had some really tough times up there.
It was, you know, it was one of those years where, you know, like I said, if you roughly in the Corn Belt this summer, Todd, drew a line from Chicago to St. Louis, to the northwest of that, you were looking at generally hot and wet conditions in varying degrees. To the southwest of that line, you were looking at hot and dry conditions. And in particular, there was a zone in northern Missouri, southern Iowa, western Illinois that was just hammered by excessive rain, sometimes 50, 60, 70 inches of total rainfall after planting, and lots of anecdotal yield reports of yields 100 bushels or less in that area. And certainly these numbers reflect that.
So let's take a look what it means. USDA now says the average market price for the year is 460 to 540. I think they raised it on 60 cents on both ends of the marketplace. That fall in line with what you might think things would look like?
That's pretty reasonable. I think that the pricing right now is, you know, when you get into these now tight stocks, rationing scenarios to some degree, It's, of course, prices are extraordinarily volatile. The market's opening up, lock limit up today, reflecting the degree of the shock. I think what's really interesting, there were a couple of interesting things on the balance sheet themselves. There was a very curious increase in the feed-in residual. They raised it 150 million bushels, which almost seems like a mea culpa on the recent stocks report for the reasons why. It was a very unusual move. There's no indication from livestock numbers why you would do that. And in a high price scenario, if anything, you might think that feed usage would be rationed downward. So there's something very unusual going on there. I think we're now setting up a basic pricing scenario where the market has to discover at what price level will which of these three main sectors cry uncle first.
Exports, ethanol,
and feed, and livestock.
And so we know fairly clearly, and we're talking about a carryout now of 902 million bushels of corn. We know that ethanol industry probably can manage a $6 corn price. Exports tend to be really steady based off of conditions and conditions around the globe, and they just don't change very much. So it might be, again, the feed usage.
It could be, but this is a really interesting situation to try to figure out what's going to happen, because on the livestock side, we've got generally throughout the sector fairly high prices and profits. And then with the normal biological, the lags it takes, even if the sectors begin to adjust, it's going to take some time. And, the marketing year is already started. So, before those adjustments, if they were going to occur, it will take most of a year. So it's hard to see a great deal of softness on that feed and residual number. It's hard to see much more softness on the export side, given the pressures that have been created through the weather problems in Russia and the Ukraine.
That only leaves ethanol to deal with.
It only leaves ethanol to deal with. And there is a little wiggle room there in the sense that the current projection of 4.7
billion
bushels used for ethanol is implies an ethanol production above the RFS mandate. That's roughly in the neighborhood of 4.45 to 4.5 billion bushels of corn. So the ethanol industry could throttle back maybe a couple 100 million bushels, but it can't go any less than that.
Or can it?
Well,
because couldn't they use the RIN?
They do have the possibility of RINs, and there is a stock of the RINs that are out there that might allow, another 2-3, maybe even as much as 400 million bushels, but that's stretching it. So the bottom line, and our figures indicate that seems like it would. It's going to take a cash corn price of at least $6 a bushel to make those ethanol plants shut down from where they are today.
Right. So it had to be above that, and then if it really did get above that, you can find, if I'm adding this up right, something between 500 and 600 million of non-usage.
Yes,
in just the ethanol, because of only having to meet the mandate, and then to meet the mandate, paying it forward with the RINs.
And and it is interesting, in the last couple of months, the RINs market, which is those renewable identification numbers that are the technical means by which the blenders meet the renewable fuels obligations, there's a secondary market for those, and you can watch the prices, and they have been ticking up over the last month, which means that the blenders were concerned probably about a short corn crop scenario driving up the price of ethanol and making ethanol blending much less profitable than it has been in the last 18 months or so.
I was awfully young and I don't remember much about this, but it seems it's reminiscent of the old PIC certificates that that corn farmers used to have.
There is an analogy there, yes.
All right.
Because they're basically, you can store ethanol in the form of these RINs certificates based on past ethanol blending.
Turn your attention to the soybean numbers. They came out today, too. And I'll be danged. They lowered the soybean average yield on the nation for the year.
Yeah, that was a big surprise to the market as well. Because, again, compared to corn, where I think what the USDA did was very consistent with, you know, large numbers of individual yield reports. In general, we seem to have been hearing better than expected soybean yields throughout much of the Midwest, but they still lowered it 0.3 of a bushel. But of course, the big mover on soybeans is that they reduced the planted acreage by about 1.2 million acres.
And so that came out of
1.1.
Yeah, that came out of the FSA numbers then.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. Because, you know, the way the USDA estimates those acreage is in the June survey, they take a very large national survey, and that's the number that they use throughout the year. And then in October, all of the FSA certification data comes in, and they're able to take a look at those, cross-check versus their June acreage survey, and make adjustments if they need to. And obviously, they made a fairly significant adjustment. I would say that this is not uncommon now in October to have these kinds of adjustments when the FSA data came in, and I think they're virtually impossible to predict the direction. And of course, that implied a major, the combination of a small drop in yield and a fairly significant drop in planted acreage dropped the ending stocks from 350 million bushels to 265 million, which is a complete change in the tone of the soybean market.
Yeah, a 25% change in the ending stocks nearly.
Yeah. Like one analyst that I saw this morning called these reports shock and awe to the markets.
As mad as they were the last time around during the stocks report, they'd probably be happy.
You know,
when
I first saw these numbers this morning, Todd, I thought you could conclude the USDA giveth and taketh away sometimes in very short periods of time.
I wondered about this. And I had talked about it on the air several times, and most were not convinced that USDA could manage to do something in this report that would move the market so sharply as the last report, but I suppose they did. And they're only managing the numbers that they get, I guess, and the stats are what they are. They're stats.
You know, it's been a very unusual weather year, and so I think it's hard for all forecasters to have gotten a handle on this. I mean, I've talked to numbers and numbers of farmers who, you know, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, say, thought, yeah, I think I have, 180, 190 bushel corn out in the field, and they'll go harvest it, and it's 165. It's just all over the Midwest like that. So I just think our data would show this is probably one of the most unusual weather years of the last 50 years, in the sense that it was just that unusual combination in some areas of hot and wet and other areas hot and dry, just makes it very difficult to get a handle on yields. The one thing that I find the oddest out of these reports is still what they did with the feed and residual usage in corn. And that's in effect saying that the 322 million bushel increase in stocks, it's the equivalent of backing that off by 150 million bushels, 10 days later.
Indeed it is. You know, I was going back, I was reading something. It's in the WASD report. Give me a second to find it, because
They have a little note about why they did that.
Yeah, where is that note?
Yeah, I read
it's
it.
It's in the coarse grains part of the WASD report.
And yeah.
U.S. feed grains production, bean residual, despite the increase, here it is. Despite the increase in the 2010-11 beginning stocks, lower forecast production and higher projected domestic disappearance leave ending stocks down sharply from last month. Feed and residual use for 2010-11 projected 150 million bushels higher, reflecting the expected impact of new crop corn usage before September the 1st on indicated disappearance during the current marketing year.
If you want, I can explain. They have bought into what happened after the stocks report was released, which was an increase of 322 million bushels on corn. Many in the trade argued that the USDA had missed the fact that there was a very early harvest in particularly the southern part of the Corn Belt, and there was a very large amount of poor quality corn. Lots of what was finally left over at the end of the year was just really low quality stuff, some of it trading apparently as low as $1, $1.20 a bushel. And so it made economic sense that they would, that there was a premium on the early corn that was harvested so that you could blend that stuff together. And somehow then, if you think about it, well, is that old crop or is that new crop corn once you blend it? You know, you've got, you know, 10 or 20%
old corn. So the World Outlook Board is saying, yeah, we counted some of it as.
I think that in effect, we should interpret the correct stocks numbers now as rather than an increase of 322 million bushels, it's 322 minus 150. That's a big change in effect in the net of that number that came out 10 days ago.
Does it all add up right when you get to these numbers? I'm trying to think. So they increased feed and residual by what, 230, right? 233.
So I think the way to think about this from, you know, particularly a producer perspective is the number that they are using, because they have to use the official grain stocks numbers in these reports, is 1708. That's the ending stocks.
Yeah.
That's the official
1.7 billion carry in.
That's right. And what that number should actually be now, based on that commentary.
So they stuffed 233 million bushels.
Well, let's do that. Let's see, 1708 minus 150 would be 1558, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So right. In other words, it was 322 million bushel shock in increased stocks, and they've basically admitted that it was 50% too high.
Yeah, and they stuffed it in the feed and residual use, and that's why you found it curious, but it showed up there because that's the best place.
And then their explanation here is they're basically saying that we got it wrong. And this is very unusual. I don't recall ever seeing anything like this.
Okay, so what does it mean for, and I don't know whether you've thought about this or whether you can look forward well enough, what does it mean for the Q1 quarterly grain stocks report and then the ending, the final report in January for this crop year, crop production report?
Okay. It does mean that the December 1st stocks estimate, which will come out at the end of December, now will be much more important than it might ordinarily be. Because at some point, this all has to net out. So in other words, if we were really using 150 million bushels of new crop to blend with old crop, and on the SEP 1, it got counted as old crop,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those bushels, you ought to show up with a 150 million bushels less stocks on December 1st for the 2010-11 marketing year than you otherwise would have. It's as simple as that. You just moved them from December 1st to September 1st. And so analysts will be watching that number very close to see if this is netting out as that scenario would suggest. As far as the final crop production and yield estimates in January, usually from here would be very minor adjustments in the planted acreage figures, if any. So that by the time we get the FSA numbers, that's done. So it will all be in the yield. And there's still potential for the number to change. It's not unusual for the October number. It's typically within plus or minus 2% of the final. But that still gives you, it can still swing 4 or 5 bushels either way. I would guess most of the trade will probably lean towards the old adage that small crops get smaller, and be concerned that we might drift a bit lower in terms of the yield estimate, as hard as that is to imagine today.